Isn't it great to have a full Zendo for a Zazen Kai? These are the last days of our 90-day Ango that we started on December 26th. Seicho is here from Berkeley, and Seryu is here from Ohio, and there's a handful of you here from Massachusetts, and some people, you know, from the Lower East Side. So how marvelous that we gathered together to practice together and kind of culminate our 90 days of practice and to honor Arshiso, who has steadfastly organized us throughout this 90-day period. And in particular, she has organized a beautiful urban sesshin, or an expressive sesshin, during the last few days. After the Shuso Hosen tomorrow, Yuka will then be ushered into the role of senior student and asked to give talks and support the teaching in a more energetic way. Even more work. That's what this is about. So our Yuka, our Shuso, our head trainee for this 90-day period, is a performance artist and a psychotherapist. And she's been practicing here since 2006, 12 years. She has served our community in many different ways during those 12 years. As a PATH co-leader a couple of years ago, as a liturgy student, as a program producer, performer, a wonderful piece of work last year, and someone who just kind of picks up when she sees that something needs to be done that doesn't have to have her name on the assignment sheet, but is willing to just go for it without really a big noise or a lot of direction, just simply taking care of us, which I deeply appreciate. So, and then in the last week, she has done so much interesting work with the forms of the Zendo and working with the teachers of the Zendo in the different ways that we express the Dharma. The different ways we express ourselves as Dharma. And of course, that was the fascicle we studied with Dogen's expressing the truth, Dotoku. How expression manifests in our lives. So I'm very interested what she will say tomorrow. You know, here in the Zendo, this wonderful community of people, there are many, many people that take on work and are leaders in the community and very supportive and directly organize different aspects of the community. We're rather, as Joshin Sensei pointed out to me the other day, we're rather flat organizationally. We don't have a real strong hierarchical system here. It's kind of like step in and help out. Some of those people are asked to be Shuso, and sometimes there's some question about who is asked to be Shuso and who isn't asked to be Shuso. Quite frankly, it's just that it's someone who is willing to work with the Zendo teachers on koan study. It's something we've inherited from Japan, from our Soto line. And it's someone who's willing to go to the mat with the teachers on these ridiculous stories, teaching stories called koans. And if you're here tomorrow, you'll see why. Because in order to express a talk and then answer people's questions, one has to exercise that muscle a bit. You know, koans are essentially, most of them that we work with anyway, are old stories from China, 9, 10, 11th century China. And they all offer some kind of teaching, or people have picked out in the last 1,200 years something interesting about that story, something that might be helpful to someone who practices and wants to practice the way and wants to live a forthright life and wants to know themselves and wants to be of use to the life that is. So there's some aspect of the stories that's of interest. It's China, long time ago. And the people that collected these are pretty much, you know, poets. And it's filled with all kinds of imagery that can be confusing to people and elusive, I would say. And also, as you know, people talk about koans just like they're really hard, they're really difficult. But see, the point, the ironic point that we often forget is that the main message of koans is to drop your conceptual thinking, is to drop that very thing that you engage the minute you read a koan. Oh, this must mean this, and this means that. And going off into some kind of conceptual space. They're losing your body pretty quickly, losing your mind, and just getting caught up in some kind of net of logic or your idea of spirituality. So the koans are really what they're supposed to be doing when we're able to use them well, is to free us from that very caught up net of conceptual thinking so that we can get rid of the jargon and just see the essence of the teaching. Ah, yes. Taste it without all the other business. So naturally, part of what happens is our own devils get in the way of our enjoyment and learning from the koans. We may feel that we're being humiliated by the koans or by the teachers. We don't get it. What do you mean, I don't get it? Go deeper. What the hell does that mean? Because we think we don't understand something. Or on the other hand, we might feel quite prideful and arrogant about our understanding and speak about it in alt terms. And, you know, both are so deluded and lost. They're simply skillful ways of dropping our habitual thinking and seeing our lives and the world in a fresh way, the teachings in a fresh way, as it presents itself to us moment to moment. So, you know, what worked yesterday, you could have one koan for life, and each day, each hour, each moment, the appropriate response would be different. No right answer to koan. It's our tool of exploration. So I encourage you, even if you choose not to work on koans in a formal way, just occasionally take a look at the ones that are talked about or collected and have a conversation about them with a teacher. So that's what we're trying to do this year in our PATH class, which is a year-long class that's going along. And in the class, we're seeing all the dynamics that I'm talking about getting all in your head about the koan and missing the simple, sweet point of it, because there's so much and there's a fear of not getting it or a kind of prideful thing about, oh, I get this. And so you can see that because we're online and we're sharing discussions about it. So I thought I'd talk about that koan this morning. So as one of the members told me last month, that when I gave a talk on that koan, it was like a cheat sheet he had. But not really, because it's just for me. Your response will be different. So the name of this one is from the Book of Serenity, and it's Yun Min's Two Sicknesses. So Yun Min, in Japanese you might know the name Unman. He lived in the mid-9th to the mid-10th century in South China. His teachings are included in all three of the books, the Gateless Gate, the Blue Cliff Record, and the Book of Serenity. So he's like a major, major figure in Zen history. And he's known for his ability to kind of break apart exactly what I'm talking about, this linear thinking, to break it apart simply with his sometimes very abrupt responses and sometimes really lyrical responses to questions that students pose to help people get out of the muddle of the thinking and come back to this moment. You know, this tradition of over-intellectualizing our practice, all aspects of our practice, you know, actually goes way back to the original sutras, the early sutras. And there's a sutra, the Kula Malunka Vada Sutra, or the Poison Arrow Sutra, you may have heard of, where the Buddha compares those who study the Dharma using concepts and ideas to a person who's wounded with a poison arrow. And when someone comes to pull the arrow out to relieve the suffering, the person says, "No, first I want to know about this arrow." No, just imagine this, you've got this arrow, perhaps where you're aching right now.
Right.
Here's the sutra. "First, I want to know more about this arrow. It's just as if a man were wounded with an arrow thickly smeared with poison. His friends and companions, kinsmen and relatives, would provide him with a surgeon. And the man would say, 'I won't have this arrow removed until I know whether the man who wounded me was a noble warrior, a Brahmin, a merchant, or a worker.' He would say, 'I won't have this arrow removed until I know the given name and clan name of the man who wounded me.'" Now, just imagine the blood is pouring out, right? And the poison is seeping in. "Until I know his home village, town, or city, until I know whether the bow with which I was wounded was a long bow or a crossbow, until I know whether the bowstring with which I was wounded was fiber, bamboo thread, sinew, hemp, or bark, until I know whether the shaft with which I was wounded was wild or cultivated, until I know whether the feathers of the shaft with which I was wounded were those of a vulture, a stork, a hawk, a peacock, or another bird, until I know whether the shaft with which I was wounded was bound with a sinew, an ox, a water buffalo, a longo, or a monkey.' He would say, 'I won't have this arrow removed until I know whether the shaft with which I was wounded was that of a common arrow, a curved arrow, a barbed, a calf tooth, or an oleander arrow. The man would die, and those things would still remain unknown to him.'" Yeah. And we struggle so much to, you know, articulate our suffering, our sorrows, and the path. But the message here, you know, is very obvious. This sutra concludes with the Buddha saying, "The teaching is about the truth of suffering and how we meet it." So I would say that our teaching is about our approach to life and our practice and how they meet. So in this koan of two sicknesses, Yun Min is offering a teaching on this. for the sickness that can arise in our intellectual pursuit of Zen practice. The koan of two sicknesses is about the sickness that can arise in our intellectual pursuit of Zen practice. And those of you who are online and following this discussion will be amused. The introduction is written by Wansung, some 68 years after Hongzhi collected these teachings. And it hints at the whole substance of the koan. It says, a bodiless person suffers illness. A handless person compounds medicine. A mouthless person ingests it. A senseless man is well. But tell me, how do you treat a mortal disease? So the thing is, what is Wansung alerting us to? What is he kind of, the intro is always kind of like, pay attention to this aspect, huh? And I think it relates to the state of samadhi that so many of us yearn to experience. What Dogen called the dropping off of body and mind. Even when we experience ourselves as part of the whole universe, even then, when we say, I am not my body, my hands are not my hands, still, we need some medicine to cure us of those very ideas we have about our practice. I'm not my body, I'm not my hands. And the medicine is the teaching that Yomen gives us in this koan. So here's the koan. Great Master Yomen said, when the light does not penetrate freely, there are two kinds of sicknesses. One is when all the places are not clear and there is something before you. Having penetrated the emptiness of all things, suddenly it seems that there is something. This, too, is the light not penetrating freely. Also, the Dharma body has two kinds of sickness. One is when you manage to reach the Dharma body, but because your clinging to Dharma is not forgotten, your sense of self remains, and you fall into the realm of the Dharma body. Even if you pass through, if you let go, that won't do. Examining carefully to think, what breath is there? This too is sickness. So now it's all clear. I don't need to say anymore. I looked at my notes and I had been writing all over them. I made a copy of the koan. I've been writing all over it over successive days and saw the kind of different ways that this falls into my experience in my life. He starts off with, when the light does not penetrate freely, when the light of the Dharma, you know, enlightenment, the light of reality, of Dharma, is not quite present. So when we're not quite clear, there are two kinds of sickness. The first is a situation when our practice seems like we are alone in the dark and there's something we can't perceive. What is that something? We're alone in the dark and there's something we cannot perceive. Usually, for me, that's some sense of myself that I can't quite integrate into that wise, enlightened me that somehow seems hidden. There's a separation there. So dark. There's some wisdom that I can't access. That object that we can't see is our separation from ourselves. Our separation from the reality. There's some idea of me, you know, something out there that's just awesome, but it's not me. So what would that not me be? Some idea I have of realizing emptiness? Some idea I have of wisdom? Maybe some idea of how things should be, or how I should see things, or how I should be. Since they're obscured, can't quite see it, have this feeling about it, sad feeling, grasping feeling. I am ill. Left grasping in the dark for something obscure. So it's good to ask ourselves at each point in our practice, what do we think is missing? What is missing? On this beautiful Saturday, crowded Zendo, what's missing? Yunmin continues, he says, having penetrated the emptiness of all things, suddenly it seems like there is something. This too is the light not penetrating freely. Wow. Okay, I thought I got it there for a minute. Huh? We recognize that the words and ideas we have about ourselves and others and reality are constructs. And that actually we're just part of a streaming mass of realities, constantly streaming, that we organize in different ways with our senses. Constantly shifting, self, not self. Like motes of dust in the sunlight. Still, something is off. Huang Shi, commentary, the fellow who collected these, made these wonderful commentaries on this. He said about this particular line, that this too is the light not penetrating freely. He says, Master Foyan said, searching for a donkey while riding on a donkey is one illness. After getting on the donkey, not being willing to get down is also an illness. You see where it's going? Very sweet. Think of the times that when you've been really unwilling to get up from zazen, or willing to get up from maybe your thinking mind, on the other hand, something you've grasped onto. This is my truth. Not being willing to meet your life right where it is. We call that hesitating, not being willing to step off a 100-foot pole, see what happens next. Ah, you know, we have morning zazen here, you know. And here we are, and it's 8:28. and the bell rings. Five minutes later, you're on Broadway in Houston. Please watch for the cars. And often we're not willing to pull ourselves away from that. We have to get off that donkey. You know, when we enter the world, no matter where we live or what our conditions are, we always encounter something that we can serve, something we can care for. And we can serve without selfishness or anger. If we can maintain that quality of mind when we were on the donkey. We have to get off the donkey, or we have to get off the 100-foot pole. But we can work for the well-being of everyone, however we encounter their suffering. We allow the experience of the light to penetrate into our marrow. So this quality of entering into the world is the next part that Yunmen is talking about in this koan. He says, also the Dharma body has two kinds of sickness. One is when you manage to reach the Dharma body, but because your clinging to Dharma is not forgotten, your sense of self remains and you fall into the realm of the Dharma body. So here he's talking about the problems of Dharma teachings. This is for all of us here in this room. and how we can get trapped by them and cling to them. The first, you know, is really obvious. The way we cling to teachings. That which says, I know. This is the teaching and I know that. And usually that energy is directed to someone else that you're informing of the teaching. Less often is it introspective, really. You know, that's what we see in our personal lives when we lecture our loved ones and our co-workers. Perhaps also, you know, we need to look at the political and social situation very carefully. And we want to serve. We want to make a difference. We don't want to punish or humiliate others. And it's a fine line there for many of us who are so sure we're right about everything. I actually, you know, although I'll keep looking at my notes, I don't really read you these ridiculous things I say to myself. I just look for the point. Why did I say danger in the Dharma body? What is the Dharma body? You know, Dharma is the teachings, right? Dharma, the teachings, and body is the wholeness, vast wholeness in this body. Mote of dust body, teaching body. It's always operating, and it's not mysterious. We just stop and look, which is, you know, what our practice is about, stopping, looking. Yunmen says, if you pass through, if you let go, that won't do. Examining carefully to think, what breath is there? This too is sickness. And then Wansong added a comment to that line. He says, nursing sickness, the body dies. Before the doctor has left the house, convulsions break out. Don't cling to the teachings. Drop it. Over and over again. What are the teachings? You know, as we know them, they're these old Chinese jokes from the 9th to 11th century that have been translated by some well-meaning and very thoughtful translators that have dedicated their lives to translating these Chinese characters, which are actually pictures, to words in English. Most of us read our translations in English, so that would be the minds of people that were born in the 50s. I mean, what are we clinging to? These are tools to use for our own insight and ability to expand our ability to serve, to be of use, to make our life. We're born, we die, what are we going to do in between? That's what it's about. Don't cling to the teachings. They're delicious. They're wonderful. Don't cling to them. It's like being told you can't have so much sugar. Oh, okay. It's possible. Here's his verse. The dense web of myriad forms is so precipitous. The dense web of myriad forms, all these ideas we have. Passing through beyond location blocks the eyes, sweeping out his garden. Who has the strength? Hidden in a person's heart, it naturally produces feelings. A boat crosses a rustic ford, wet with autumn's aquamarine, sailing into the reed flowers, shining on the snow, bright. With a bolt of silk, the old fisherman takes it to market. Floating in the wind, a single leaf travels on the waves. We could, of course, spend 90 days on this verse. The dense web of myriad forms is so precipitous, passing through beyond location blocks the eyes. Reality is vast. When we practice deeply, we may lose sight of what is right in front of us. Right in front of us. Sweeping out his garden, who has the strength? Are we going to be weak or strong in our pursuit of the Dharma? And what is that strength? To not be seduced by our ideas, but to be fresh. Hidden in a person's heart, it naturally produces feelings. So, you know, basically that's when we get caught up in the ego. I can't do this, I'm not good enough, or I'm so good. I will teach everyone. But, you know, if you study these long enough, you realize that one's not going to work. A boat crosses a rustic ford, wet with autumn's aquamarine, sailing into the reed flowers, shining on the snow, bright. Life goes on in clarity when you let go of your attachment to this is the truth. With a bolt of silk, an old fisherman takes it to market. You know, this is the Vimalakirti's marketplace. The subway. Ryotan Sensei gave a beautiful mando on Thursday this week and kept asking us in the mando, what is the monastery in Dogen's fascicle, Dotoku? You know, what is the monastery, you know? This is the marketplace. It's a subway car. That's our monastery. The East Village, the Upper West Side, the A train's not running today. That's this bolt of silk that's going to the market. Our life, really. And we're like that single leaf in the last line, floating in the wind, a single leaf travels on the waves. That's our life. So beautiful. We can drop all our ideas about it. And that's our task, being able to step out in the world It's what each of us are called to do. You know, we, all of us will practice and we will fall into these sicknesses in our practice, and the antidote to it is to act, to turn and walk out the door and function in the world and trust that the Dharma teachings are in you, that you are the Dharma teachings, and that they will manifest themselves when you're at the demonstration, when you're at the meeting, when you're doing what needs to be done in whatever realm that you work in and that you serve in. So, Yuka, our Shuso, has been a marvelous example of this during this 9-day ongo. She's been willing to sit zazen, probably a little more regularly than usual, speak zazen, do zazen, while working in the world, caring for her loved ones, and taking care of all of us for the last 90 days, as past Shusos have. Her expression teaches us that we can survive Yunmen's 2 sicknesses. And as we say in the world, enter the world with bliss-bestowing hands. So I have a gatha to end this talk. Grumpy old young men, you made us a baffling puzzle, all to say that you were a soft-hearted old fool, urging us to jump down from the 100-foot pole and roll up our sleeves. There's so much to do.